The object was called an airship and was said to have an escort of four other airships, all of which are referred to as flying saucers. People have been seeing them for years, but never with such certainty and agreement of description. Past sightings of such unidentified flying objects have been so numerous that the federal government, through the U.S. Air Force, has established an inquiry group to look into such reports. The civilian chief of this inquiry group is Dr. J. Allen Hynek, professor of astronomy at Northwestern University. One might say that he's the highest ranking and most informed person in the government on the subject. It is therefore a particular privilege for us to be able to speak with Dr. Hynek and get the best possible answers to questions that are of interest to everyone. Sir, in the most recent incident, we understand that about 60 people claim to have seen the same thing at the same time. First, would you describe what they say they saw, and then tell us what you think it was?
Well, first of all, I cannot say that they all said they saw the same thing. It is true that several small groups of people were fairly, in fact, quite consistent in the description of what they saw. And I would say they were very sincere and honest and were reporting to the best of their abilities. Now, there were two primary cases. Now, it is true that many sporadic and scattered reports came in from all over, and I certainly couldn't have taken the time to investigate all of those. However, I concentrated my attention on the two best described events, those that had the most observers and the most that had some residue or least common denominator, one might say. Well, now, what were these? Both instances, separated by some 60 miles, occurred in swamps. I know because I tramped through that swamp for 2 hours, and it was not very pleasant. First of all, it seemed to me that this could hardly be a coincidence that the lights, and let me remind you that all that was described, with the exception of two people, the great majority of the people described only lights, a glow, and rather small red, yellow, and green lights. Now, the fact that this occurred near a swamp or at a swamp in both cases, a great number of observers were referring to those two events, led me to follow that as a clue. Now, an astronomer doesn't usually worry about swamps. His eyes are looking elsewhere generally. But in as rapid and as thorough a way as was possible in that time, I did notice, for instance, that in Professor Minard's book, and Minard is an astronomer, he describes in his book Light and Color in the Open Air, he describes lights of these colors, green, red, and yellow, and white, as dancing around swamp areas. The will-o'-the-wisp, sometimes called Ignis fatuus, and known by other names also, I believe foxfire is another name given to it. At any rate, then in some chemistry books and in talks with various chemistry and zoology and botany professors, I was told by them, and this is in their field, that it is quite common for the rotting vegetation underneath the ice in swampy areas during winter to develop a fair amount of marsh gas, which is methane, CH4, also phosphine, PH3. And the phosphine can, they tell me, spontaneously ignite. When a spring thaw comes, and the gases can bubble up from below and get released, the gases can ignite spontaneously, and they flicker all over the place. They'll flicker at one place, then go out, and suddenly appear someplace else, which gives the illusion of motion. And this description fit quite well the description that both the many co-eds at the Hillsdale College told me, and also the policemen who were actually in the swamp and saw the lights themselves. None of the policemen, as far as the swamp experience is concerned, observed any object. They observed lights aglow. And there we are. Well, maybe you would like to have asked more about that, but I think this sums up the thing. But I'd like to emphasize here that this does not, in no sense of the word, by this particular explanation, which refers to these two specific cases, am I trying to give a blanket interpretation or a blanket solution to the entire UFO phenomenon?
In this particular case, Dr. Hynek, you mentioned that there were some co-eds and policemen. Does this make up the basic group of those who saw it?
Yes, it does. There were no, with the exception of the civil defense director in Hillsdale, I would say there were no technically trained observers. By this I do not mean that there were no intelligent observers. The great majority were very intelligent observers, but not technically trained in the as chemists, let's say, or as physicists. For instance, wouldn't it have been nice had we gotten a spectrographic analysis of the lights? That would solve the problem immediately.
But these observers were not unintelligent people, obviously.
No, definitely not. And they were, I can understand, and I sort of feel very sympathetic, particularly to Mr. Manor, the farmer in question, whose land was quickly overrun by the curiosity seekers, and he was called all sorts of strange names like Martian and so forth. It is just too bad that mass hysteria can take over after a perfectly honest and sincere sighting is reported.
Let me get this point straight. These people that saw this weren't in any way excited about it or hysterical about the fact. They were seriously observing what they thought they saw, right?
That is absolutely correct. Even the young ladies at the college, you would normally expect they might get hysterical and rush around and say strange things, but according to all reports I had, and when I talked to them myself, they were quite level-headed. But the lights they saw were localized to the swamp area. They were described as red and yellow and green, and they did not move very far from the general locale of the swamp.
Let me ask this, sir. Why hadn't these local residents seen this kind of gas before?
Well, that's a question I asked myself, too. I said, well, look, there are lots of swamps in Michigan. And why, therefore, isn't this a very common phenomenon? Well, I think if we pursue this explanation and investigation, we must say that the particular seasonal conditions were such as to produce it at this time. That is, the winter was... I understand in that area was unusually mild. The thaw had just occurred, and it could very well be that the swamp gas may funnel up in certain places more than it does in others. Although, since this has happened, and even before the Air Force explanation was given, I've had numerous letters now from people in Iowa, Illinois, Minnesota, all saying before this explanation is given, incidentally, that this must be the explanation, that they, as children and in their past experience, have seen lights of this sort quite frequently.
Lights of the sort that might have been swamp gas, is that it?
Well, definitely were in their cases, without question.
Well, how did the people react to your findings after you told them what you thought you saw there in regard to what they thought they saw? One newspaper columnist in Chicago, Irv Kupson, that reports this morning that you seem to indicate they wanted to run you out of town because their sightings weren't valid.
Well, I said that facetiously, but I think there was a genuine disappointment that I couldn't come out and say that this was unexplainable and that we probably were being visited by space people, because there is a tremendous will to believe. I'm not a psychologist, but as an armchair or curbstone psychologist, it appears to me that we live in such frightening times with so much war scare and the times are unstable, you might say, and with the space age dawning, having definitely dawned, of course, people would love, I think, very dearly love to have some help come to us from the outside. And it seems also that perhaps the old-time religion isn't quite scientific enough for many people, and they would like to, I think, sort of latch on to the idea that our big brothers from outer space are coming in to help us out or something like that.
Do you believe, sir, that it's possible that since you understand outer space best, perhaps you can answer this more valid answer than most people? Knowing outer space as you do, what do you think are the chances that this planet of Earth might be visited by something from another world?
I think there is a fairly clear answer to that. Astronomers, the great majority of astronomers today, would agree, I believe, that it is rather cosmically provincial to feel that we would be the only or the highest intelligence in the universe, and that there are undoubtedly perhaps even millions of other solar systems, which does not necessarily mean that they have intelligent life, but again, if there are millions of solar systems, why just ours to have life on it? Well, I think here we must distinguish between two words, possible and probable. And very frequently, the public mixes up these two words. I would say, and I think most of my colleagues would agree with me, that it is entirely possible that we might, in the past or at present, be visited by outside distant civilizations. But it is highly improbable. The difference between possible and probable, I think, must be emphasized here, because the distances are so, in as far as we know, are so extremely vast that even if we could travel with the speed of light, it would still take a great many years to get here from, on our time scale, that is, to get here from these places.
It would have to be then some sort of a being that could transmit itself in other than a physical form, wouldn't it? That would have to travel that distance.
Well, that's a rather interesting concept, and certainly it's not in the field of physical science as yet, at any rate, to consider that. But I've been... I have investigated, or... No, this is not right. I have read, in the past 18 years, when I've been the Air Force's consultant on this, over 10,000 cases. And the great, great, great majority of these are easily explained. Well, what are the primary explanations? Aircraft, balloons, meteors, stars, satellites. In fact, people in general even though sincere, are quite poor observers. And they, so that in a great, great majority of cases, a UFO, an unidentified flying object, is merely a usual thing seen under unusual circumstances. But there are several hundred, actually, unexplained cases. Now, why are they unexplained? Perhaps because they were not sufficiently investigated. On the other hand, there remains the possibility, and any open-minded scientist must not close his mind to the possibility that there are things that we yet do not know about.
In the 18 years you've been studying this for the U.S. Air Force, how many have been reported totally?
Well over 10,000 have been reported just to the Air Force, and that is in this country. Now, the Air Force does not by any means get all the reports. There are many civilian groups who gather reports, and as was mentioned in the Vallée's book, for instance, The Anatomy of a Phenomenon, he pointed out and made a very good case and showed that the UFO phenomenon was a global thing. France, for instance, had a tremendous wave of sightings in 1954. Brazil and Argentina this past year. France and England have had quite a few. In fact, England, I believe, has per square mile more UFO sightings than we do.
And here we always thought, living in our little world around this Midwestern state, that we only saw them in the United States. Then this is a worldwide problem, and is there any kind of coordination that's achieved with other countries on the subject?
Well, you bring up a good point, though. I'm just wondering whether, I don't know whether to suggest this, to what degree of seriousness I should suggest this, but since it is a global thing and could possibly affect international relations, that I'm just wondering whether, let's say the United Nations or UNESCO or something might set up a small commission to look into this. I have already, in my capacity as scientific consultant to the Air Force, recommended some time ago, quite a long time before this happened, this present sighting happened, that in those that competent scientists quietly study such cases when the evidence from responsible people appears to warrant such study. But I want to emphasize the study should be scientific, quiet, unpublicized, and in other words, done in a dignified way, without, devoid of all the mass hysteria that comes in with these things.
Well, have some of these kinds of investigations been carried out that we don't know about?
I've carried out a few, but there are a number of cases. For instance, I don't know I honestly don't know what to think of the case reported in Cuernavaca, Mexico, last September. Reputedly, and I unfortunately couldn't get down there for one thing. The Air Force has no jurisdiction in Mexico. But here's again a case of where this UN commission might look into things like this. There was a startling report made in Cuernavaca, which on the face of it seems extremely mysterious. But I want to emphasize on the face of it. If we dig down and investigate it, it may turn out to be a perfectly normal, natural thing. At the moment, I don't see how.
Going along your lines of thinking concerning a UN commission, it is true that in Congress, among all the congressmen that are there are certainly a large group of skeptics, and they seem to want to organize a congressional investigation of this latest incident. What do you think about that?
Well, a scientist should always welcome an investigation if it's a scientific investigation. I think it depends here on what is meant by a congressional investigation. If it is if competent witnesses are called in, and if the whole situation is studied scientifically and given more time to it than I, as one person, could give to it, I would welcome such a thing.
Who do you think would give you your strongest arguments, by the way?
For or against?
Either way, I think in favor of the reality of these things, who do you think would give you your biggest argument?
Well, I think the people right in Michigan, the sheriff, Sheriff Harvey, and the farmer, Mr. Manor, and a number of people around there. There have been some reports even after that, I understand. I think they would give, because they were sincerely puzzled. I mean, I found in this no attempt at a hoax, at least I don't think so. So that people say, well, I don't know what you say about this, but I know what I saw. I believe what I see. Well, but the human eye can be deceived.
I've even heard people, and I'm sure you remember these occasions, accuse you of being in a kind of a collusion with the government and denying these things.
Well, this I can categorically deny, because the press release, for instance, of last Friday was written by me and only by me. It's in my own handwriting and my own style, and the Air Force gave me complete freedom to say what I wished.
I have one more question, sir. In your opinion, which of these incidents, thousands that have existed over the past 18 years you've been studying them, appear to be the most interesting, or which seems to be the most valid to you? Can you remember any one in particular?
I'd hate to pick one in particular, because somebody might say, well, I know that was such and such and so forth. But let's see, offhand, there was the rather interesting case in Homer, New York, which was unpublicized. There was an interesting case, as I mentioned, in Cuernavaca, Mexico. There's a case in Bismarck, North Dakota, a number of years ago. One in Monticello, Wisconsin. One could go on.
Well, what would be the most unexplainable factor in the incident that makes it interesting to you?
Well, of course, the most interesting thing would be, what is it that they really saw? But apart from that, what bothers me is that there are generally so few witnesses. Now, if a real, suppose for the moment that we conjecture, and I'm not saying this seriously, but suppose that we were to conjecture and hypothesize that a spacecraft were visiting us, then isn't it logical to suppose that, A, our marvelous surveillance systems would pick this up? Secondly, if it's seen at point A, why is it not also seen on its way to point B? If an airliner leaves O'Hare, Chicago, and on its way to San Francisco, you can track its path. You'll see it in Omaha and Denver and Salt Lake City and so forth. Whereas the thing that bothers me about some of these sightings is that suddenly an object or a light or something, a sighting, is reported at location A, and then it just seems to go up vertically, they say, and nobody sees it go away, really.
I think we have one very current example from the newspaper of March 28th. Chicago Sun-Times reports from a place called Bad Axe, again in the Midwest state of Michigan. Three policemen in this little community in Michigan's Thumb reported watching a bright blue light over Lake Huron for about half an hour early Sunday. Bad Axe policeman Peter Torres described the object as very large and moving too fast to be a star.
I'd like to comment on things like that. I have no reference to this particular policeman because I don't know him, and he may be quite competent and sincere. But more generally, here's a typical report that will come in, a typical statement. I'll ask someone, well, was the object moving? Oh, it was moving very fast, very fast. Well, how fast? Well, I think 500 miles an hour or more. Well, that's interesting. How long did you see it? About 2 hours.
Yes.
Well, now, what do you do with a thing like that? There are so many contradictions, and you have to throw contradictory evidence out. You just can't try to give it credence.
And when a policeman says that something's moving too fast to be a star, a policeman knows a good deal about speed on the road, but we wonder if he knows about the speed of stars.
Well, that's a good point you make there.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, sir. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. We've been talking with Dr. J. Allen Hynek, professor of astronomy at Northwestern University and chief civilian investigator for the U.S. Air Force on the subject of unidentified flying objects. This is John Schlimmer, the Voice of America, Chicago.